Who remembers the album that caused the Australian group AC/DC to finally explode in America? Who remembers what the name of that album was? Come on, ladies, you two are young enough to know.
I never paid attention to the name of albums.
Yeah, me either. Just the
song. Well, I'm going to give you a clue. The album cover is basically all black. Basically. It's got their name in it. Back is Black. You can tell what kind of music my wife didn't listen to growing up so thoroughly. Back in Black. It was Back in Black. Back in Black. And the reason that I know about it is I was growing up a normal rock and roll loving 16-year-old teenager when that came out, which means it was, what was the year, love?
When you were 16.
And it was after my birthday, so I wasn't 15, it was 16.
74
would be 10. This is embarrassing. How long have we been married?
I only did 4 years, not 6 years.
1980, exactly. It came out in 1980. I would argue nothing like it had ever been released before. And I would say nothing equal has come afterward, even from AC/DC. Now, that doesn't mean nothing is good. I'm just saying equal. That just like the Cars' first album or Boston's first album, none of those have been recreated since. Now, so it's funny, so when I wrote the sermon, I say, now does anyone remember what the next studio album from AC/DC was? But if you didn't remember that one, you're not going to remember. It was called For Those About to Rock. It has cannons on the front. And if you ever go to an AC/DC concert, it's pretty incredible when they do that song and they have their fake cannons firing as they do in the song. As a rock release, it was almost as good as its predecessor. But I had a song that came to mind when the subject of the sermon came to me. The tune is, and I should note, by the way, please, if you decide to listen to AC/DC, listen to it for the music, not for the message, okay? Doesn't mean of all of AC/DC's messages are bad, but I would not want you emulating what the songs say to do, okay, Cisco? We good with that? Just as your minister, I want to make that clear. But on For Those About to Rock, there's a song called Evil Walks. And the chorus is this: evil walks behind you, evil sleeps beside you. I'm not talking about you, honey. Evil talks arouse you, evil walks behind you. So it repeats that first part twice. Evil walks behind you. Two recent incidents have reminded me about how true the overall thought behind those verses is, which is that we are surrounded by evil. We are surrounded by evil. The first incident actually happened back in May of 2017, but intersected my life when I was chosen. Do you know what I was chosen for, Cisco? Jury duty. A couple weeks back, I was chosen for jury duty. On May 20th, 2017, a man in his late 40s who had desired an intimate relationship with a 20-year-old woman who he first met when he was 15 snapped after running some errands with her. It started with him getting angry when she wouldn't tell him who she was texting or Facebooking or whatever, and he took her smartphone, just like yours, and threw it out her car window. I think while they were driving. So going down the road, out the window. He then proceeded to miss the exit they should have taken, went into an empty parking lot in an industrial section of Aurora near I-70. It was a Saturday, so that's why it was empty. Got out of his seat, walked around the SUV, opened her door, and deeply cut the right side of her neck with a razor blade. Before he was done, he had also cut the left side of her neck, so he got back into the car, came around, got back in the car, had cut the left side of her neck 7 times, along with her left wrist. He also tried to kill himself. With her 18-month-old baby in the back seat witnessing the whole thing. Evil. Does evil walk behind you? Yes, it does. The reason it ended up being only attempted first-degree murder is that after cutting himself and taking pills, he went unconscious first. So she was able to take his phone. Of course, what happened to her phone, Cisco? Out the window. So he goes unconscious. She takes his phone and calls 911. She should have died. I wouldn't be surprised when we get to heaven to find out that somehow angels saved her. As she said to the dispatcher who answered her call, she was bleeding out. The gash here, I don't have my notes here, but the gash here was enough. You have two jugular veins. There's an outer one which really can't kill you. You bleed a lot, but you don't generally bleed out quickly with that one. But he had actually got so deep that he nicked the inner one, which was bleeding a lot. She should have died. Both lived. Thank God it was a failed murder-suicide. And that with his conviction for first-degree attempted murder, first-degree assault, and two counts of second-degree kidnapping, her and the 18-month-old, he'll be off the streets for a very long time. Sentencing is in April. The second incident is indelibly burned into the minds of all aware of news in February. A 19-year-old, well, I don't know, I've got a student here. I don't know if he's actually still a student at that point. But a 19-year-old, long known to be a danger, went into his former high school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, and killed 17. I could go more into specifics, but most of you are already probably aware of just how troubled the young man was and of the carnage he created. So I ask again, does evil walk behind you? Yes, it does. Now, we here in this humble church confidently say that evil exists. But does the world, especially the irreligious, is that the word? Non-religious world, do they really believe that? Going back to my Max Dictionary, I figure it doesn't sound as good as saying the Oxford English Dictionary or something like that, but my Max Dictionary, very useful. Evil's noun form is defined as this. It says, profound immorality, wickedness, and depravity, especially when regarded as a supernatural force. The world is stalked by relentless evil. And then it gives a couple other points, but let's just stick with that. Especially when regarded as a supernatural force. I think if we asked even the non-religious, most people believe there is a, quote, profound immorality, wickedness, and depravity. Especially in those who disagree with their worldview, right? Isn't that how it works? So I got no problem believing in that. But you know, by divorcing evil from its spiritual foundations, and I think it's really important, by divorcing evil from its spiritual foundations, they are falling into a trap. Charles, I think it's Baudelaire maybe, identified, and I'm going to try this in French first, because that's when he wrote it, and I'm sure I'm going to mess it up, so anybody who knows French, my apologies ahead of time, but he wrote, La plus belle de ruses de diable est de vous persuader qu'il n'existe pas. And using just the good old Google translation, which I think is fair, the most beautiful trick of the devil is to persuade you that he does not exist. The most beautiful trick of the devil, or some would say greatest trick of the devil, is to persuade you that he does not exist. Who's right? Does evil exist? I mean, true evil, spiritual evil, exist? If you search for the word evil in the English Standard Version, which I've got here, you'll get 531 results in 494 verses. 531 results in 494 verses. And sure, it does occur in different contexts, but it's pretty clear that the Holy Spirit behind Scripture believes in evil. Does evil walk behind you? Does evil as a supernatural force walk behind you, Cisco? Yes, it does. We haven't gotten scriptural. We'll be there soon. But let me ask another. How many people have heard the story of the frog and the scorpion? Frog and the scorpion, have you heard this story? This is actually a good story for you to know and the kids to know too, because it's one about human nature, but it's told with a frog and a scorpion. Short version is that a scorpion wants to get to the other side of a river. Can scorpions swim? Maybe they can. For this story, we're going to say no, okay? I was going to say, I didn't study it, but scorpions can't swim, so he wants the frog to take him. Frog's pretty smart, though. Frog says, what do you think the frog tells the scorpion?
No.
Oh, you'll kill me, right? Scorpions go back to him, dead. Scorpion says, what do you mean I'll kill you? If I kill you, I'll die too. Frog thinks, oh, that's pretty convincing. Frog says, okay, I'll take you across. So they get about halfway across the river, and guess what the scorpion does?
Kills
him. He stings him. And the frog says, what are you doing? We're both going to die. And you know what the scorpion replied? It's in my nature. Yep. But the reality is, now think of that, okay? I was going to say, before I make it, I want you to think of that. Let's look at some scriptures to see what we can learn about evil. First, Genesis 6, 5 through 7. Genesis 6, 5 through 7. Keep the scorpion and the frog story in your mind as you hear what we're about to read, or as you see what you're about to read. Genesis 6, verses 5 through 7. And don't close the book. The next verse is going to be from, or verses are going to be from Genesis 2. Genesis 6, 5 through 7. Are we there? Almost?
Yeah.
Okay. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every, notice that word, that every intention of the thoughts of his heart being man's, was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man, whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals, and creeping things, and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So anybody know when we're in mankind's history, in Earth's history, where are we right now? What's about to happen? Right. Just before God wipes out all but eight, right, in the flood. So relatively early in our history, man already reached a point where, quote, every intention of our thoughts, the way it says, every intention of the thoughts of his heart, they were ours, of his heart, were only evil continually. But God did save Noah, a righteous man and his family. And after the flood, we are told this, let's turn to it, in Genesis 8:21. So think about this. He saves a righteous man and his family. The flood wraps up, and now we're going to read 8:21. Well, I'll start back at 20. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, so God's happy about this, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man. But this is strange. I will never again curse the ground because of man. But read this, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. We're going to stop there, but it goes on. So we have the flood. He wipes out pretty much all of mankind. Did anything change in human hearts? No, not at all. He still said, the intention, I got to fix a couple typos in here, but the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Okay, Perhaps after multiple millennia, things got better. We're going to zoom forward. We're going to zoom into the first century. Jesus has died on the cross. His church has been formed. And then Paul writes to the Romans. So let's turn to Romans 1, 28 through 32. Romans 1, 28 through 32. Yep. Are we there? Excuse me. And since... So one thing I should note, this is a third part. So there's part one, part two, this is part three. So it's already... We've gone through a couple layers of bad before we hit here. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of what?
Evil,
disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. It is true, Paul didn't say that that was true of everyone when he wrote it. But if you look at how the section it is in starts in Romans 2, it doesn't seem terribly limited to me. And based on what you see behind you, to use the AC/DC song's picture, if I were to say those words, the ones that we just read, if I were to say those about the modern world, would you agree? So what we just read in Romans 1:28 through 32. If you didn't know Romans, and if we hadn't read that, and I'd say, I want to tell you about the modern world, and I said those words, would you agree that those words are true?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would. There did seem a time where Christian morality, combined with improvements in living conditions, there seemed like there was a time that led to an improvement in men's hearts, in women's hearts. But now, and even then, to be honest, it could have all just been happening less visibly. Part of the reason we see it so well now is we have media. If your opponents do something wrong, you know it before anybody else does. But we have the media. So I'm not saying it was better, but it did seem there was a time where the intersection of Christianity and missions and all that stuff in living conditions improved the hearts. But now, do we feel that way? And I'm not just talking about the horrendous acts, those two horrendous acts, equivalent ones. I'm not talking about the same things that the sermon started with. Look at what is popular in movies, in TV, in games. Look at how people treat each other in social media. Look at what happens in every part of the world where totalitarianism flourishes. And the reason I want you to look at that is that's when men are completely in control. Right? We have a habit of checking each other, but when you give mankind the ability to take complete control, look what happens. Look what happens. Does evil walk behind you? Michelle? Yes, it does. And that is because we are like the scorpion. It's in our nature. We can't help ourselves. Evil. Driven by spiritual malaise walks behind us. So what should we do? What should we do? We now are in agreement that evil walks behind us. Nobody said no. What should we do about it? The first couple things I'm going to share, I'm not going to prove from Scripture because I think they're kind of a given or that I've already proven them. Number one, believe it exists in spiritual and supernatural form. I've already basically proven this in this sermon or previous ones. So number one, believe it exists, because that's important. That it exists in spiritual and supernatural form. Number two, pray. The reason I'm not going to prove that one is because we should pray to God about everything important. The existence of evil and ridding the universe of it is important. Agreed? Agreed? Yeah. However, what else can we learn from the Bible? Let's turn to Romans 12:9. Romans 12:9. Almost there? Romans 12:9. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. So number three, number one, believe it exists in supernatural and spiritual form. Number two, pray. Number three, abhor what is evil. Of course I abhor evil, Alan. If you do, if we do, then why do we still sin so much? If we really abhor evil, then why do we still sin so much? Have we really realized how bad it is? If we do, if you do, abhor evil, why do we then watch movies or listen to the music that glorifies it? If you do, or we do, why do we ignore the sins of politicians we agree with? At least our worldview, I should say. Why do we have a habit of doing that? And just look at what society does. And I think at some level, every one of us here is guilty of it too. And I could go on with the list. We can say we abhor evil. And I could go on with the list, but I think you get the point. We all fall short in abhorring sin. Let's just ask the Lord for forgiveness, wisdom, and strength. Okay? Because we have to learn to truly abhor evil. Next, let's look at 1 Thessalonians 5:20 through 22. 1 Thessalonians 5:20 through 22. Do not despise prophecies, but test everything. Hold fast to what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. You got it, Cisco. Another obvious one, isn't it? As Nancy Reagan might say, if she was still with us, just say no. Number four, abstain from every form of evil. And if you think about it, if we follow number three and abhor evil, then number four should come pretty naturally. Murder is evil. Abstain from it. White lies are evil. Abstain from them. Abstain from every form of evil. Okay, last evil verse that we're going to go with. 1 Corinthians 5:13. 1 Corinthians 5:13. Are we there? Mm-mm. Not yet? Almost? 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 13. God judges those outside. Purge the evil person from among you. This one's a bit harder. But number five is purge evil from the church. Purge evil from the church. Whether that evil is ministers and denominations that embrace what God calls an abomination. And by the way, just in case, that list is not a single item list of things that God calls an abomination. But whether that is evil in ministers and denominations that embrace what God calls an abomination, or leaders who are kept after sexual misconduct or restored too quickly, or Christians who besmirch the gospel for political expediency, or, and here's another list that I could keep going on with, we must purge evil from the church. It hurts our witness. It hurts us. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not suggesting that we be overly judgmental. And I am personally sick of people, Christian and non-Christian, who tell me I have to react to a politician a certain way or I've sold my soul. But when a denomination, a public Christian leader, or someone in this congregation clearly crosses the line, we must speak and purge evil from the church. Good news is, I don't see anything in this church, but that would be a hard one. Some new person comes, we love the person, and by the way, you can deal with church discipline and still love somebody. As a matter of fact, if you need to do church discipline and you don't love the person. But somebody could come in here and that could be a hard one. And we had it back in the church back in Antrim, where we had to deal with somebody who was well loved by the congregation, but there was a problem. As God did through Moses to the Israelites, I got a whole bunch of typos in this one. Luckily, you guys don't see them, except I keep mentioning them. I now give you a choice. For this commandment that I command you today is not too hard for you, neither is it too far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, "Who will ascend to heaven for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it?" Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, "Who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it?" But the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you can do it. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. That's those last words again. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. Choose life. Choose God. Abhor evil. Abstain from evil. Purge evil from the church. Choose Jesus.